Your Majesties, Your Royal Highness, ladies and gentlemen, it's such a great honor to be here. I will be presenting a brief and hopefully thought-provoking review of the current state of the world of cultural heritage conservation, and perhaps of the world of cultural heritage at large. But as of now, we will not go that far. And my lecture is titled "The End of Conservation." We will later see if this makes sense or not, and perhaps we will have an occasion to discuss this later. And it is always a good idea to begin with the beginning. So. Let me suggest this idea. There was a beginning to conservation. Conservation has not been with us since the dawn of humanity. It's an invention. It's a cultural construction we have made at some point in history. And in order to determine at which moment was conservation invented, we could be speaking about this for, I don't know, hours. And but I will just bring here some direct witness of the birth of conservation. This is Eugène Viollet-le-Duc, who was one of the fathers of conservation, of modern conservation, conservation as we know it. And he was in charge of the rich built heritage in France for around four decades during the 19th century. So, he wrote this impressive nine-volume dictionary, and he wrote this. Conservation. Brief note: in Latin languages, restauration, restauração, restauro, restauración are the exact synonym of conservation in English. So, conservation, the word and the thing, are modern. The interesting thing is that he wrote this in 1866, and he should know. He was even more precise because he wrote this. It's only in the second quarter of our century that it has been attempted to restore buildings from other ages. So here is another direct witness of the birth of conservation. In this case, I'm bringing here Camillo Boito, the Italian engineer, who is also one of the fathers of modern conservation. And he wrote this, L'arte del restaurare lo so è recente, which means the art of conservation, I know it's recent. The interesting thing is that he wrote this in this beautiful, nice, lively book, which was written in 1893. So these are knowledgeable people who are telling us that conservation was invented at some point in the 19th century. It's a European invention that took place during the 19th century. So at the beginning, conservation was driven by historical sciences. By historical sciences, I'm referring to history, art history, archaeology. Then, more and more noticeably, material sciences took over, and around the middle decades of the 20th century, material sciences took the lead. And since then, material sciences has been providing us with amazing benefits, my fellow speakers here will show some of the amazing possibilities of material sciences and technologies in the field of conservation. The advent of material sciences into the field had a number of consequences, but I would suggest here that one of the most noticeable one for most people is the fact that the iconography of the conservator changed. So this is Mr. Grebe. I wouldn't dare to pronounce He was a conservator at the Rijksmuseum, and this picture, this photo was taken at the year 1920. And you can see the iconography of the conservator. This is how conservators looked and how they wanted to be perceived. You see the dark apron, maybe a blue or a brown apron, and then a bottle of solvent, perhaps a cotton swab. Then, after the advent of material sciences, the iconography of the conservator changed. And since then, we have been wearing white coats and perhaps using a microscope. I would say that things have not changed much since then, but perhaps there is this little change that is taking could be taking place right now, which is the increasing relevance that what we could call human sciences, psychology, sociology, anthropology, semiotics, are getting in the field. These disciplines are getting more and more important to the field. And this is a change that we are witnessing right now. This is where my line of thinking fits in. But we are not there yet. This is something that is happening at the moment. So the point I wanted to make is that there was a beginning. Conservation began at some point. And, well, I know this is not hard logic, but if there was a beginning, there might be an end, and this is what I would be this is the possibility I will be exploring here. And in order to do so, I will present you with some patterns that I have detected in the literature, in the practice of conservation in the last years. These patterns hint that there could be something going on in the field of conservation. Now, I will present you with these symptoms that I detect in the field, and then you will judge by yourselves. So the first symptom is the fact that more and more people, and I mean intelligent people, smart people, are perceiving conservation as an obsession. And this very precise term is so often used, it's amazing. So this is, for instance, a picture of a book, a paper book I was reading. It was published in 3 or 4 years ago, in 2019. And this is actually my yellow highlight, but if you read the whole phrase, you will understand what I mean. I've been reading this once and again and again and again in the last years, and I think it has a meaning. This is another example. The obsession with physical conservation became embedded in 20th century mentalities. This is one of the earliest mentions of conservation as an obsession that I have found, but okay, you can find many examples. This is from the book that Professor Schlüter mentioned before. It was published this year, and I could have included all those quotes in this PowerPoint, but I was lazy, so I just copied the quote. And it is interesting that so many people are finding that conservation could be related to a mental disorder. So this is the first symptom, and the second one is that what they have called the accept decay trend. There is an increasing trend to accept that we all are gonna die, that entropy happens, and that it makes no sense to preserve things. Yeah. I mean, I'm the messenger. Okay, please don't. So this is the idea. A new view of heritage serving society in times of rapid climate change embraces loss. So embracing loss is the perfect opposite to conservation. This is from a paper book published this year. Again, we need to accept loss. But that means that we need to renounce to conservation. So more and more people are thinking like this. Perhaps the most beautiful and the most polished expression of this trend is in this book, Curated Decay, Heritage Beyond Saving, by Kathleen DeSylvie. It was published in 2017. And here, this is a table of contents. There are plenty of quotes I could have used here. But by just looking at the table of contents, you will get the idea. Curating mutability, philosophies of non-intervention, positive passivity, care without conservation. So you get the idea. This trend is gaining more and more popularity. This is the second symptom. The third one is the fact that more and more, again, smart, learned, knowledgeable persons are seeing conservation as a form of evil, which is sort of concern for conservators like me. But this is happening. This is from a French newspaper. The state assumes the right of masterworks to age peacefully. And this was published in Italy, in La Repubblica, which is one of the most important newspapers in Italy. It was published in the first page of La Repubblica in 2007. I have not got the image from La Repubblica, but the text has been reproduced in many places. In the upper left corner, you can read the title of this manifesto. Fermiamo i restauri, cambiano la nostra storia. Stop conservation treatments, they change our history. And the authors are very well-known historians, Carlo Ginzburg and Salvatore Settis. So, we should not just ignore them. This is again from a paper book. I like paper books. A paper book I'm reading. It has been published this very year. And again, this is from a page. You can see my hand highlight. And conservation and preservation, I know the intentions are good, but in fact, they sabotage the cultural survival. And I insist, these people are not morons. I mean, they are smart people. And so we should pay attention. We should listen to what they are saying and interpret it correctly. This is the third symptom. The fourth symptom is this. Future generations might not like it. This is the fourth symptom is the increasing realization that what we are conserving for future generations may not suit the needs of our tastes of future generations. And yes, more and more people are insisting on this. This is from a paper published in 2021. And here there is this beautiful quote. The projection of present values into the future for future generations assumes that future generations will value and use heritage in the same way as present generations. This, again, promotes the status quo or assumes that one's vision of future generations is the norm without acknowledging alternatives or legitimacy and effectively colonizes the future. And this is such a lovely metaphor. I'm a conservator, so according to this metaphor, I'm a colonial agent, you see, except that I'm not colonizing lands in, far away, I'm colonizing time. So this is such a beautiful metaphor. It alone would make for a beautiful lecture, but we don't have time for that. Instead, we can insist on this. This is from a book that has been published this year, this very year, and here you can read this. Each generation looks at the same culture and the same materials from its own position. And from that it follows, except that here it precedes, that there is no need to fix things. So you get the idea. This is the fourth symptom. The fifth symptom is what I have called the heritage Big Bang. The heritage Big Bang is a very involved phenomenon that consists in the expansion of the notion of cultural heritage to unexplored spaces. In the beginning, cultural heritage included masterworks, paintings, sculpture, palaces, cathedrals, rooms like this. But after some time, the notion of cultural heritage started including popular heritage. A Bakelite phone, a locomotive, an old computer, popular things. And then it became more ample. The notion started including what I have called non-objects, physical. Non-objects are which are physical are, for instance, a dance, which includes physical phenomenon, light, bodies moving forces, a ritual, And then non-objects, metaphysical entities, such as, for instance, a novel, a text, a computer program. Those things are pure information, but they too have become cultural heritage. So this presents a number of issues for the cultural heritage field. This is the cover of a book it belongs to a series published here in Amsterdam, a beautiful series of small books. And here, this was published in 2016, and here the author suggests that, for instance, nuclear waste is also a variety of cultural heritage. So can you imagine what that means for the field? Can you imagine what that means for conservators? Now things have gone even, I would say, worse, but no. I mean, the notion of cultural heritage has become even more ample in the last years. So you see how nature has started to be considering also a part of cultural heritage. And that means that the notion is, I would say, out of control. And I don't know if it's a good or bad thing, but that brings results like this. This meeting took place a few weeks ago, and we can read things like this. And the funny thing here is that I smile, but there is deep reasoning behind this. So we need to approach this with care. I approach this with a smile, but then when I'm alone, So the last symptom I would like to present you is the loss of the conservator's skill. I am a conservator. When I speak of conservator's skills, I refer to the skills that we conservators have developed in a very unique personal way, that what Polanyi, the Polish philosopher, would call tacit knowledge. And this is me and Marina Ronconi from Italy working in my lab. And when I speak of the conservator's skills, I refer to the conservators, for instance, needed to handle that large piece of wet paper without breaking. The skills needed to leave all this setup flat. The skills needed to prepare an adhesive that will be strong enough to hold the whole thing flat while it dries, but will be weak enough to allow for simply pulling the whole composite from the base without breaking. These skills cannot be put into words, but they are very important. In fact, for some people, they define our profession. In fact, those skills are unique to our profession. Jonathan Ashley Smith has highlighted how there is a drift in the profession. We conservators tend to do nothing more and more. This quote was taken from this beautiful paper published in 2018 titled "The Ethics of Doing Nothing." And there is an approach to conservation which is very wary of really intervening. This has some undesirable effects that were highlighted in 2019 in this conference in Warsaw of paper conservators. For instance, poor productivity, less confidence in manual dexterity, fewer lessons learned. And this phenomenon is becoming a real problem in the field, and so more and more people are suggesting that those skills should themselves be an object of conservation themselves. So more and more people are calling for the preservation of those skills. This is from other paper. There is an imminent loss of those intangible skills, and these skills should themselves be drawn up into the mission statements of conservation organizations. So in summary, I have these six symptoms that I have detected in the field. And when put together, they might hint at something. They might hint that there is going to be some change in the field. After nearly 200 years of history, we might be approaching the end of conservation, or maybe the end of conservation as we know it. Or perhaps we are approaching conservation 2.0. There is something going on. This could be the history of conservation. Then again, other people are suggesting that it is not conservation 2.0. It's no longer conservation. We are living in a post-preservation time or in a post-conservation time. And this is very, very interesting. This is a very interesting phenomenon. This could be the history. And if we look at the field, we will realize that conservation is now finding many replacing notions. There are many candidate replacing notions. Conservation 2.0, post-preservation, post-conservation. Safeguarding, this is very popular. Care, change management. There are candidates for replacing conservation. So we could be at the end of conservation, the end of conservation could happen sometime soon or maybe not happen at all, but these notions are taking over in the field. And now, as an ending, I realized that, as I was preparing this lecture, I realized that the fact that there are so many replacement concepts for conservation could actually be interpreted as a sixth symptom, that there could be a change around the corner. So now I don't know if this is the end of conservation or not. I hope we can discuss this later, but I know this is the end of my lecture. So thank you very much.